Getting pretty close to the end of our study on Elisha the prophet. We don't have a whole lot more material given in 2 Kings about Elisha. And whenever we get to the conclusion of that information, then we'll move on to either somebody else or to a book in the Bible, whatever the Lord has for us. But we're getting kind of close to the end. And here in 2 Kings chapter 8, we're going to pick up in verse number 1. We finished up chapter 7 last Sunday, or on Wednesday rather. But it says in chapter 8, verse number 1, "Then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life." Now this is referring back to the Shunammite woman. And hopefully y'all remember from our study, this woman who had helped Elisha out, her and her husband had built him a little chamber. Y'all remember that? Set up a little chamber so that whenever he passed through, he'd have a place to stay. And he had told her that she's going to have a child, and she did. She had a son. And then you remember one day his head got to hurting him real bad while he was out in the field with his father, and he went back to his mother and he died. And of course, she went to Elisha. She went to God's man, talked to him about it, and Elisha went back, and he, through the power of God, was able to raise that boy back to life. God allowed him to be able to do that. A real life miracle is what happened there, just like many other times we've seen in the life of Elisha. And so this is who it's talking about when it says in verse 1, "Then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life," talking about the Shunammite woman. And this is what he said to her. He said, "Arise and go thou and thine household," that's you and your family and the people in your house, "and sojourn wheresoever thou canst sojourn." Find you a place somewhere to stay for a while. That's what it means when it says sojourn. When you sojourn, you just go there for a while. It's a temporary stay. Now, sometimes a sojourning will stretch on out and it'll last for a number of years, but it's still just temporary. It's not a permanent move. You're not picking up, moving somewhere where you're going to stay the rest of your life. You just go there for a while, ever how long that might be, and then you return back to where you were before. So Elisha doesn't tell her to pick up and leave and never come back. He says, go wherever you can and sojourn. Just stay there. And it says, "For the Lord hath called for a famine." The Lord hath called for a famine. Now, this is something that the Lord had called for, and when he calls for something to be done, well, it's just going to be done. That's the way it is. So there was going to be a famine. And hopefully you understand by now that whenever the people of Israel endured things like famines or pestilences or plagues, or whenever things got really bad and they were captured by their enemy or their enemy besieged them and things happened like we read about in the previous chapter, when all of that kind of stuff happened with the people of Israel, it was because of God's judgment on those people. That's why it happened. Remember me showing you the other night when we were studying how that God promised those people, the people of Israel, and told them, look, if you do what I say, if you obey my commandments, then I'll bless you in this, and I'll bless you in this, and I'll bless you in this. And he just goes on and on with all these things that he says, I'll do good for you. But then what was the flip side to that? You'll remember? If you don't obey my commandments, then this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to curse you in this. I'm going to curse you in this. I'm going to curse you in this. And there's a whole big long laundry list of things that he said he was going to do if they didn't do right. And the people of Israel, right now, during this time, for the most part, are in rebellion to God. The guy that is the king of Israel is the son of Ahab. Y'all remember Jehoram? He's the son of Ahab, and he's the king of Israel at the time, and he walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, the Bible said. He wasn't as bad as his father Ahab, but he was a bad man. He wasn't living for God, and he wasn't leading the people to live for God. So I believe that's why God called for a famine, because he had told them that they wouldn't have famines, that they would get the rain, the early, the latter, the rain they needed, so that their crops would grow and the ground would produce if they do right. So if there's a famine, obviously they're not doing right. And God has called for this famine, and it's going to last, it says, 7 years. And it shall also come upon the land 7 years. So basically she's going to need to find her somewhere to hang out for how long? At least 7 years. And Elisha is really doing this woman a big favor, because he's letting her know what is about to happen. And that way she can get her house in order. That way she can get together her family and they can pick up and they can move and get established somewhere else before the famine comes. And he even lets her know exactly how long it's going to be. He tells her that the Lord's called for this famine. It's going to be there for 7 years. So he's really giving her a heads up here. He's letting her know ahead of time what's going to happen and how long it's going to last. And that is, you know, that's doing this lady a big favor. It really is. In verse 2 says, the woman arose. To her credit, it says she did after the saying of the man of God. You know what she actually did? She actually listened to the preacher. Wow, imagine that. Imagine that. Somebody actually listened to what the preacher said. And not just listened in the sense of hearing what the preacher said, but actually did what the preacher said. Well, that's marvelous. You talk about a miracle of God. That right there is a miracle of God, friend. When you run across somebody that will actually listen to God's man and do what he says, that's quite an amazing thing, especially nowadays. Amen? Yeah. Most people today want to get mad, poot your lips out, gripe and bellyache and complain. I had a couple of women lambasting me before church tonight here. Yeah. It's amazing. But it's also amazing. Have you noticed from our studies so far that they often didn't want to listen, but as soon as things went bad, who was the first one they talked to? They'd go running back to him, and they'd want him to wave his magic wand, you know, and fix everything up, right? Isn't that how people are? They don't listen to what the preacher says, but then when they go out and make a mess out of their life, the first person they want to call, preacher, you come talk to me? And hey, I'll be glad to come talk to you, but once the damage is done, there's only so much I can do, you know what I mean? I can't just show up over at your house with a bag full of tricks and make everything right that you messed up. I can't do that. The best thing to do is to just not get in the mess to start with. Just do what God tells you to do, and then you don't get in that mess. And that's exactly what this woman did. You know, she didn't have to. Elisha didn't force her to leave. He just said, look, you need to go somewhere else. It's fixing to get bad around here. But she had to make up her mind whether she was going to do what he said or not. She had to make a choice. She had to decide, well, am I going to listen to what he said and take him at his word, or am I just going to stay here and, you know, see if it happens? She made a choice, and her choice was to listen to what God's man told her. The woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God. And she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. That wasn't the most ideal place to have to stay for any amount of time, for that matter, because the Philistines were just a bunch of heathens. I mean, if you learn anything from reading in the Old Testament, you learn that they were just a bunch of heathens. They were the enemies of God's people, but oftentimes you find in the Bible that God's people will wind up during bad times going down to the land of the Philistines. I think about Abraham. I think about his son going and being, Jacob going and spending some time with the Philistines. And here's this lady and her household. They wind up sojourning in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. They go down there for that 7 year period of time. Now verse 3. And it came to pass at the 7 years' end. Here is a perfect example of how in the Bible you'll have one verse that'll talk about how something's going to happen and it's going to last for a certain duration. And then in the very next verse, it picks up at the end of that duration. You know what I'm talking about? And it doesn't give you any of the details about what happened during that period of time. All you know is that the woman went down there to the land of the Philistines and she stayed there for 7 years, and for that 7 years there was a famine. That's all you know. You don't read anything in here about what happened with her, all the things that took place in her life and her family's life while they were in the land of the Philistines. You don't get any of that. You don't get any information about how bad it was in the land that she left during the 7 years. All you get is that she went to the land of the Philistines and she came back 7 years later when the famine was over. That's all you get. Now, why does the Lord do stuff like that? Why does he leave out all that information? When you read in the New Testament about the life of the Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and there's a good bit of information there, but do you realize, compared to what the Bible says he did, how little information we actually got about the Lord Jesus Christ? Didn't John say that if everything he had said and did had been put in a book, that the world could not contain the books that would be written? Now, you get to thinking about that. If this whole world couldn't contain all the books that were written, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John ain't all that much, friend. There's a whole lot of stuff that Christ did while he was here we don't even know about, have no record of it. Why does God do stuff like that? Well, when you figure it out, you tell me. I don't understand why he does all that. This is what I do. I'll tell you how I do that. I just trust that God knows what he's doing. And I believe that if it was something I needed to know, he'd have let me know it. Y'all following what I'm saying? I don't take offense to that. I just say, God, you're heaps out smarter than me. And if that was something that I needed to know, you would have gave me that information. And I just press on. So that's what you do. That's right. And one thing that you can, I think, at least assume is that because she did what God told her to do through Elisha, that her and her family did okay during that 7 years of famine. Probably a lot better than the ones that remained back there during the famine. So obeying God's always the best thing. But verse 3 says, and it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines, and she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. Evidently, somebody had taken over her home and over the property while she was gone. So she goes to talk to the king so she can get her home and her property back. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God. Y'all remember him? Last time we read about him, what had happened? He got struck with leprosy because he was a greedy, covetous man. He was not content with what he had. So he wound up with the leprosy that was on Naaman the Syrian. He wound up with that leprosy. But he's still Elisha's servant at this time. And the king is talking with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elisha hath done. He's wanting to hear all the stories. And I suppose that would be interesting, to hear all those different stories and tales. Verse 5 says, and it came to pass as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life. What you're fixing to read is one of those spiritual coincidences. At the moment that he's telling the king about when Elisha raised the Shunammite's boy from the dead, at that moment when he's telling that story, guess who shows up? Well, look at it. It says, the king, when as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. Shows up right at the moment that he's actually telling that story. That's when that woman comes in. Now, how many of y'all believe that was an accident? The world would say it was luck. That's a big word, you know. Boy, am I lucky. You know, I'm just so lucky. I don't believe in luck at all, zero, none. I don't believe in it. I believe in God. That's what I believe in. And I don't believe in luck. I don't believe in happenstance or coincidences or any of that kind of stuff. I believe that God is the one who lays it all out. And I don't think by any, not for one second, I think this was luck. I think God ordered it so that this woman showed up right at the very time that he's telling this story. And why do you think God did that? Would it be so that this woman could have some favor shown to her? You know what that shows further? That shows further that God's blessing this woman because she listened to the man of God. Because she did what Elisha had said, and because all of those years she had taken care of Elisha and provided for Elisha and had been faithful to do as he had said and listened to his word, God's working everything. He's ordering. The Bible says the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. I believe you can apply the same thing to a good woman. He's ordering this woman's steps so that his favor comes on her because of how she's lived her life. So right at that moment, she shows up asking about her house and her land. And Gehazi said, "My Lord, O king, this is the woman." You know that woman I'm telling you about? Well, there she is right there. This is her. This is the woman. And this is her son. This is the boy that was dead. This is him right here, whom Elisha restored to life. When the king asked the woman, she told him. So he asked her, you really the woman? Did this really happen? You the woman, this your boy? She said, yeah, that's me. She told him. So the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, restore, look at this, all that was hers, and here, and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land, even until now. That's the favor of God. That's his blessing on this woman. And not only, you know, we talk about the principle of sowing and reaping and how we reap what we sow. And that is a principle that is to the good and the bad. It works both ways, right? You sow good, you reap good. You sow bad, you reap bad. That's your principle. I'll tell you something else about sowing and reaping. You reap more than you sow, don't you? I mean, you go out in the field and plant, you take a little bag of, we'll just say corn seed, and plant you a few rows of corn. If that stuff grows and produces like it's supposed to, you wind up with a heap sight more corn than what you put in the ground, don't you? You reap more than you sow. You know what this woman does? She reaps more than she had sown. Because not only does she get back what was hers initially, she gets back her house and she gets back her land, but he says, and by the way, not only do I want you to give back the house and the land, but all the fruit that was produced on her property while she was gone, give all that to her too. Repay her that much, all that since she was gone. That's the Lord's blessing and favor on her. And again, I think it all goes back to how she was in her life, faithful to do as God told her to do through his man Elisha. The Lord shows her great favor. Now we come to verse 7. And Elisha came to Damascus. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, was sick. And it was told him, saying, the man of God has come hither. Somebody gives him word. This king of Syria has got some kind of sickness. It's called a disease a couple of times in the passage. And it's evidently pretty serious. But when he gets word that the king, that the man of God is there, the king said unto Hazael, this Hazael first shows up back in 1 Kings when Elijah is still around. And there was a prophecy made back then, really, about this man. But it says in verse 8, and the king said unto Hazael, take a present in thine hand and go meet the man of God and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, shall I recover of this disease? It says, take a present in thine hand. Take something to give him. Don't go empty-handed. Go and offer him something. We saw where Naaman did the same thing when he came down there to be healed of his leprosy. Remember, they brought all that stuff down there to give him? How much of that did Elisha take? Zero. Elisha was not a hireling prophet. He didn't do what he did for money. That wasn't his way. But the king feels like, look, if you're going to go ask something of him, you need to take a present. And sometimes people give presents to flatter you and to butter you up and that sort of thing. I don't know what his motive, maybe his motive was 100% pure. Or maybe he thought, well, you know, if I'm nice to the man of God, then the Lord may heal me of this disease here. I don't know what he's thinking in his mind. But he says, take a present in thine hand and go meet the man of God and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, shall I recover of this disease? So Hazael went to meet him and took a present with him, even of every good thing of Damascus, 40 camels burden. 40 camels burden would be what 40 camels could carry, is the idea. Now, that's a pretty good bit of stuff there. You load down 40 camels, it says, of every good thing of Damascus. So he ain't just taking him the leftover stuff. It's good stuff. And he loads down 40 camels, or what would be the amount 40 camels could carry, and that's what he brings with him. And came and stood before him and said, thy son Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, hath sent me to thee, saying, shall I recover of this disease? And Elisha said unto him, go, say unto him, thou mayest certainly recover, howbeit the Lord hath showed me that he shall surely die. He says, you go back, and this is what you tell him. You tell him, thou mayest certainly recover, but the Lord showed me that he's going to die. He's going to wind up dead. Now that sounds, I mean, when you read at it and just kind of read over it, don't really look at it and pay attention, it almost sounds like Elisha's telling him to go lie to the man, doesn't it? Go back and tell him he's going to get better when the Lord has shown me he's not going to get better. But what you tell him is that he's going to get better. That's kind of how that, what you think when you read that. But I want you to look at it and pay close attention now. Elisha said unto him, go say unto him, thou mayest certainly recover. He doesn't say go tell him you will certainly recover, does he? He says you go tell him thou mayest certainly recover, which means you go tell him this is something that he could get over. It is something he could over. It's not a disease that's necessarily going to end in a fatality. It is something that he could get over, but he's going to wind up dead anyway. And what you're going to see is he doesn't mean he's going to wind up dead from the disease. He just means he's going to wind up dead. So he's not telling him a lie. He's just saying, look, yeah, let him know that this is something that, you know, it's a disease you can get over. You don't have to die from this. Because what was his question? Shall I recover of this disease? Well, it was a disease that he could have got over, but God had done determined that the man was going to die. Not from the disease, but he's going to wind up dead. Verse 11. And he settled his countenance steadfastly until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. Now, I'm not sure. When it says he settled his countenance steadfastly until he was ashamed, I don't know if that means Hazael did that or Elisha did that. I'm not sure which one that was. But it does say at the end that the man of God wept. He starts crying. And he's not just, you know, just mildly crying. He's weeping. It says the man of God wept. It's an intense cry. And Hazael said, "Why weepeth my lord? Why are you crying? Why are you so upset?" And he answered, "Because I know the evil that thou wilt do unto the children of Israel." He says, "I'm crying because I know what you're going to do." Talking to Hazael, "I know what you're going to do." You know what God had done? God had already revealed to Elisha what this man was going to do. And we've seen many times how the Lord was constantly allowing Elisha to see things ahead of time. And he has seen the future and knows what this man's going to do. And he has a great burden for the people of Israel because those were his people and he loved them. He loved the people of Israel. And when he realizes what's going to happen to them through this man, it breaks his heart. He says, "I know the evil that thou wilt do unto the children of Israel." Look at what he's going to do. "Their strongholds wilt thou set on fire, and their young men wilt thou slay with the sword, and wilt dash their children." You know what that means? Dash their children? Let's take their children and dash them against stones or against buildings and kill them. That's what he's talking about. And rip up their women with a child. You know what that means? That's killing the wife along with her unborn baby, is what that is. This is what God has revealed to Elisha that Hazael is going to do. He's weeping over what is going to happen to the people of Israel through this man right here. He's weeping about it. It shows you that Elisha was a man with compassion and a man with a burden for his people. Even though his people were not doing right, he loved them and he didn't want to see them suffer. And when you really love somebody, that's how it is. If you love them, you may not agree with how they're living, but you don't want to see them suffer. You don't want to see them have to go through bad things. But sometimes that's how it is. Hazael said, "But what? Is thy servant a dog that he should do this great thing?" He's like, "Well, me? You know, am I just a dog?" He's just trying to say, "There's no way I would do what you're saying. I wouldn't do that. That'd make me a dog if I did that." And Elisha answered, "The Lord has showed me that thou shalt be king over Syria." See, right now he's just a servant. But Elisha says, "Look, you're going to be king. And when you become king, this is what you're going to do." It's amazing how power changes people. When he said there in verse 13, "But what is thy servant a dog that he should do this great thing?" I don't think he, in the position he was in, just being a servant to Ben-Hadad, that's not something that he would have done or thought about doing. He really is amazed that Elisha's saying he's going to do this. He just doesn't believe he would do such a thing like that. But he's going to be king one day. You know what happens when people get promoted, when people get taken to a position of authority, a lot of times that old head begins to swell and that power corrupts them. It really does. And they become a vile person, a wicked person that'll do all kinds of horrible things. Things that at one time in their life, they would have thought they would never do. I would never do that. Then that power gets in there and it corrupts them. And that's exactly what happens to this man. In fact, just hearing that he's going to be king changes the man. When he knows, "I'm next in line. Soon as Ben-Hadad's out of the way, this old boy's going to the throne." It immediately had an effect on the man. How do you know that? Well, look at this. Verse 14, "So he departed from Elisha and came to his master," that would have been Ben-Hadad, "who said to him, 'What said Elisha to thee?'" What did he say when you asked him if I was going to get over this disease? "And he answered, 'He told me that thou shouldest surely recover.'" Is that right? No. He said, you go tell him, "Thou mayest certainly recover." This is something you can get over. It's not a disease necessarily going to kill you, But he never did say, you will recover. And furthermore, Elisha said, howbeit the Lord hath showed me that he shall surely die. He kind of left that part out, didn't he? He didn't give him the whole story. He just told him part of it. He didn't tell him the bad news. He didn't go on over here and say, well, you know, you may get over this disease, but you're going to die anyway. He didn't tell him that. But look at what he does. And it came to pass on the morrow. That's the next day after he gets back and tells the man. The next day, on the morrow, that he took a thick cloth. This is what Hazael did. He took a thick cloth and dipped it in water and spread it on his face so that he died, and Hazael reigned in his stead. Corrupted him, didn't it? I mean, you don't see prior to this where Hazael was having thoughts of killing the king and taking over and being in control or anything like that. But as soon as he hears from Elisha, you're going to be king. God showed me that. It just, man, it messed that guy up. And he just immediately, the wheels start turning. He goes right back home. He lies to his master, and the next day he kills him. Kills him. I don't know. Look back at 1 Kings 19 just for a second. 1 Kings 19. This is back, like I say, before Elijah, the prophet Elijah, was taken up into heaven. And this is during the time when he had kind of got down and out, and he had gone out into the wilderness and asked to die, and the Lord showed him himself or revealed himself to Elijah. And this is what God said to him, 1 Kings 19:15. And the Lord said unto him, go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when thou comest, anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. That's the first time that man's ever mentioned in the Bible. And God told Elijah way back here, you anoint that fellow to be king. God had determined that that man would be king. He told Elijah to anoint him, but it wasn't then that he actually became the king. And that happened sometimes. In fact, that happened with David. You remember that? God anointed David years before he actually became the king and took over to be king. But God also showed Elisha that this man was going to be king. And he tells him, as soon as he tells him, he sets in a plan to get rid of the fellow that's in front of him. And notice how he killed him. He took a thick cloth and dipped it in water and spread it on his face. Now, when did he do that? Did he do that while he was asleep? Because what would that do? That suffocates you, right? You know, maybe the guy's in there asleep because he's sick, got a disease. And he wakes, he goes to bed, he puts a cloth over and the fellow smothers to death. Or he could have went in there and put it over and just held it there till he couldn't breathe anymore and he died. I don't know how he did it, but I know it says he took a thick cloth, so it's thick material, and he dipped it in water, which would make it heavy, where it wouldn't blow off. It's, to me, it almost reads as if he didn't put it on there and hold it on him, but he got a thick cloth, he put it in water, soaked it in water to where it would be real heavy, because if you just lay something on your face and it's not real heavy, a little breeze comes by, well, what happened? Could blow it off, couldn't it? But you got a big thick cloth and it's weighted down with water laying over somebody's face and it's not going to come off real easy. So to me, it almost seems like he just did it like that while he was asleep or something and he died. But in either case or ever how he did it, he winds up dead and he comes to the throne. And we won't look at it because we're not going to study about Hazael, but if we went on through the book of 2 Kings and just studied verse by verse through the rest of this book, you would find that those things that Elisha said he was going to do, he did those things. They come to pass. Any questions about what we looked at here tonight? This is where Elisha's story ends, really in this chapter. When you get to the next chapter, chapter 9, you see Elisha mentioned again. And then when you go all the way over to chapter 13, at the end of that chapter, you read a little bit more about Elisha. And then that's the end of his story. Any questions?